You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
You need the time to delegate in front. Don't wait till you're completely swamped, because then you don't have time to effectively delegate. You have to see that, you know, now is the time, put some time aside and work out, you know, who are you delegating to, some of those things we can drill into a little bit.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. On today's episode, my guest is professional speaker, technology evangelist, and regional CTO of B2B Cubed, Marco Coulter. Born and bred in Australia, Marco is now a US citizen in New York. As an immigrant and global citizen, he enjoys acquiring and sharing knowledge, whether as a child rummaging through discarded telephone wires, foraging for useful circuitry, or traveling the world seeking to understand new cultures. He's always unpacking existing and future technologies to bridge the divide from technology to viable business solution. He's the author of hundreds of reports on cloud and storage, and earned the nickname the Tech Whisperer for his skills in translating business drivers for a technical audience and technical concepts for business leaders. In 2020, Marco was selected as a DevOps Institute ambassador for his support of the Humans of DevOps. You can read his blog at techwhisperer.com. That's tech-whisperer.com. Marco, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason, thank you very much for having me on.
A fellow New Yorker, I realize you're an ex-Aussie. Well, you're never an ex-Aussie, right? You're always an Aussie.
I'm an international person of mystery with multiple citizenships.
I love that title. I wish I could steal that title for myself, but it's not true. So, well, Marco, are you ready to get human?
Very much so.
Awesome. Well, Marco, we just kind of learned a little bit about what you're doing today, a little bit about your past, but tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to these days.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah. So I'm consulting at the moment as a technical evangelist. And the thing that I love to do, a friend of mine gave me that nickname, the Tech Whisperer, and when they worked out that, you know, I had a business background, I've run product lines and been responsible for budgets and so on, I understood those needs, but I started life as an operator through being a programmer and have the scars of bringing down the savings application for an entire country and things like that. And it was like, yeah, I got the technology as well, and I can talk to both groups and help them understand, you know, the needs and goals of each other. So that's sort of what I'm out there doing, coordinating, talking for mainly a mid-size and large enterprise audience. People I love to talk to today are the what I call the aspirational developers. They're the people who, you know, they've started their life, they've built themselves as a coder, they have their reputation, and they want more. They, you know, they now want to seek it moving into leadership and mentoring and things like that, and helping other humans get better at DevOps.
Isn't that what we are all seeking is to get better? And, you know, one of the things that on this podcast that we like to do, or actually the main reason for having this whole podcast, is to really put a spotlight on the human side of DevOps. We say it in our tagline. We say it every episode, and we mean it. We don't talk about the human skills or human issues nearly enough. And well, first, why do you think that is?
I think it's the background of technology that brings us up that way. That, you know, we're constantly evaluating technologies and going, well, this is the best solution for this problem. And even how we think about code, that if we write code and it doesn't do the right thing, then we adjust the code and it does the right thing. But you know, the old famous thing that you can go through the code and find the bug. And with humans, it doesn't work that way. It's you know, they're very complex. They're extremely complex system, and even the rewards and the nature of the human, you know, how you say something is not necessarily how they hear it. Data passed from one application to another application is still the same data, but for humans, that there is so much else going on. And I think that complexity makes us put it aside and go, well, is that really that important? And of course, many studies and so on have identified that, no, that is actually the thing that generally ends up being at the heart of an issue. I mean, DevOps itself was created because you know, developers and operators, we're trying to do a job and we're not communicating effectively with each other. And identified if we merge the two, then you get a better understanding and framework for these folks to work and be successful.
Yeah, I think we even had an episode titled like computers are easy, humans are hard, something like that. I mean, right, that's pretty much it, right? And it's not just that they're hard, they're flawed, right? Aren't we all inherently, we have our flaws and mistakes.
Well, yeah, I do, that's for sure. And yes, you know, it's not just the flaws though, but it's also, you know, a code sits there and unless you change, it doesn't change. Humans are changing every second. So
we're unpredictable.
Beautiful malleability is another great aspect of the humans of DevOps focus, that you take, you know, it's an opportunity. Like each time something doesn't quite go right, you can either look at it as an opportunity to beat somebody up, that's the wrong way, or you can look at it as the opportunity of like, oh, I didn't prepare them enough, or we can do more with this person, you know, how do I help this person, you know, be better at this next time? How do I help myself be better at giving them this task next time?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as we've been doing this podcast, as I've been doing it as the host, the past few months, you know, we've tried different things and, you know, we've done a deep dive into the humans that are actually on the other end of making decisions for DevOps. We don't talk about, the personal aspects of your life. We don't talk about, you know, where you came from, how you got into it, that nearly enough, and getting to know each other and building community. And we'll continue to do that on this podcast. But something new we wanted to try, and Marco, you're our guinea pig.
Squeak, squeak.
is getting into these human issues in a little more depth, because that's something that you, our listeners, members, have asked us to do, really. And it's shown in the data, like you said, in the upskilling report. People want the answers or want to know more about these human skills and issues. And one of them that we have identified for this first episode that we'll really deep dive into it is delegation. And it's something that I selected because it's something I struggle with myself. And Marco, you've come on to be our expert.
I've come on to discuss the topic. Slightly different thing. I won't call myself an expert. Maybe that's an Australian cultural thing. But happy to discuss it and discuss my experiences.
Fantastic. Well, okay. We won't call you an expert. We'll talk about the top. We're just two people talking. That's what this show is all about.
There you go.
So let's start with what is delegation? How would you define delegation?
So I'll give you a very quick example as we're coming up to the Thanksgiving season. In America, anyway, in the US, is, you know, you're sitting at a table and you've tasted your food and it's not salty enough and you want some salt, but it's down the other end of the table. So the simplest example is just like, you know, how do I get the salt from that end to this end? Can you pass the salt, please? And just unpacking that for a second, you know, the please is important, being polite in a circumstance and acknowledging the other person, or maybe you put a name at the front of, you know, grandma, can you pass the salt, please, to give it to a specific person. But you know, that's delegation. You're trying to get somebody else to do something for you, because otherwise you'd have to stand up and walk around the table and get it yourself and sit back down again. So what does that break? You know, that's a very simple example, but a dictionary definition would be something along the lines of, it's assigning responsibility for outcomes along with the authority to do it, to do what is needed to produce the desired results. So responsibility, authority, desired results. And that's the basis of delegation. I think revolving into that is why you delegate. And of course, that's to get somebody else to do something for you. That's the outcome you're seeking. I'm pretty sure that anybody listening to this and us included has had good and bad examples of that in their lives.
So let's unpack, like you just said, what you just said with that example, because I love that example. It's so simple, and yet it's very complex, because we sort of take advantage of some, maybe it's cultural, like you said, there's the being polite, right? This is how you have effectively communicated what you want through some cultural norms, appropriateness. We're also more inclined, I always liken things or examples to how I am raising my child, because that's one track mind, right? When you're raising a young child, trying to teach her to use the word please to ask for something, because quite frankly, when she just demands it, you want to tell her to like no. and we're like that, right? So
and it's not a bad example either. I don't know how old your children are, sort of thing.
Soon to be four.
Okay, so you sort of remember when she passed from sort of 1.5, 2, where they're in that world that, you know, their mind is that the entire world is them. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're so shocked and amazed and disappointed and cry when you leave the room, because it's like, no, I'm in control of everything. Why? What's going on here? And they, you know, somewhere around 2, we're told that they start to realize that they are in fact a part of the world rather than the world is part of them. And those simple things of like, you know, we've got to teach that. It's a cultural expectation. And I think with these simple commands, you know, if you leap it upwards to a high scale in an enterprise, a global multinational or something like that, the cultural thing is also about language. So even the thing of imagine the people at the other end of the table are complete strangers to you. Should you ask them in English? Should it be another language? I've been lucky enough in my career that I've lived in 3 countries and I've managed teams in 13. And that's given, I've had to learn how different cultures would expect that to happen. Should it be phrased as a command? Should it be rephrased as a request? And is the acknowledgement coming back going to be a direct, you know, yes, I will do that for you? Or is it going to be an indirect statement that implies that and, you know, but actually in their culture, that's the yes you're going to get. So children are great as well because they, you know, they're developing along with you. So As I say, you know, the 2-year-old child, you're going to be trying to teach differently than the 4-year-old child. And when we're delegating to members of our team, we need to understand where our team is in their sort of maturity and cultural cycles.
Yeah, I love that. And even something as simple as an email, you know, we have to really think about how we, this is something that I've especially been learning is how you develop the email and how, what you say, whether you throw in the exclamation point, whether you throw in, you know, are those fillers necessary or are they not necessary? Some people need them. Yeah. Some people need the excitement. Some people don't need the excitement. I think it all just goes back to, right, it's how you're communicating effectively. And the person on the other end and how they're going to receive it, right?
You know, do those 6 exclamation marks at the end of the sentence imply excitement or anger?
Yeah, you know, all caps, you know, right?
Yes, we all have elderly folk in our lives who send us all caps messages sort of thing. So that side of the communication, I mean, you've identified something really important there. And in any communication, not just delegation, but just, you know, how we speak versus how people hear. And of course, there's lots of books written about that. But that's an aspect of, you won't, you know, one of the key things around delegation is that you're going to make mistakes too. The people you delegate to, they're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. So my sort of first thing that I learned along the way is actually sort of keeping notes around delegation. You need the time to delegate in front. That's the one of the hard things about when to delegate is like, don't wait till you're completely swamped, because then you don't have time to effectively delegate. You have to see that, no, now is the time, put some time aside and work out, you know, who are you delegating to? Some of those things we can drill into a little bit, that you're trying to identify what the task will be when it's completed and things of that nature from a delegation point of view. So as you delegate, you need to have enough time to, you know, communicate with the person and deal with them in a human way.
So I kind of mentioned it when I was teeing up the topic. I've been delegating for a while. I've been in a managerial role of some sorts for a little while now. But I have always found it to be my biggest weakness, and I find it to be incredibly difficult. And I know I'm not alone, but sometimes I find myself saying, it's just quicker if I get it done. And I think that's a classic trap that we sometimes fall into as being a manager, someone who has to delegate, is kind of getting away from, especially because we're brought up, or many of us are brought up doing tactical things, and we are tactical and we see it tactically. And now you have to make a transition to more strategic, but it's very hard to let go of that tactical piece, especially when you know you're good at it and you can just get it done, and you could get it done faster maybe than who you're delegating to. So why is it so important to delegate, and why don't we delegate?
So this actually has a name. They call it self-enhancement bias. And that's where a manager allows their perception of a task, or of work quality, to become more negative the less they are involved in the task. Right? So, you know, I didn't help build this, therefore it's not as good. And of course, the old sort of my way or the highway approach is a part of that, assuming your way is the best. And the short version is that if you've assumed that your way is the best, you've stopped learning. You've stopped learning about that task. So that's the sort of negative of this, the self-enhancement bias, where you feel your value comes from your explicit technical knowledge versus your human knowledge. I'm not sure there is a negative to that. The negative is that you won't get out of people what you need. And that comes back to the thing of keeping notes about delegating, like when you work out that, put the time aside to delegate, make a little note of why you thought the person was the right person, why you thought the task was the right task, but follow up afterwards when at the end of the task, you know, also update that note of like, here's what you think went right, here's what you think went wrong. I've managed organizations around the world for decades, and I still do this. I still keep these sorts of notes, and at the end of a month, is generally when I just quickly scan through it to go, what did I learn this month? I'm still learning things about people and about delegation. So I thoroughly recommend that. Coming back to your comment of self-enhancement bias, your way, my way or the highway is, if it's a task that you're only going to do once and it's never going to happen again, you know what? You might be the best person to do it. But if it's a task that's going to happen twice, or more times, then you definitely need to think about, why isn't somebody else in your team, somebody that you delegate to, why aren't they ready to take on that task? As a leader, as a manager, one of your roles should be, building up your replacement, because otherwise you can't go anywhere. Now, some people think that way, right? They think, if I'm the expert in this, I can't be replaced. My job is secure. It's going to be great. And I will tell you, it doesn't really work that way. Might work for a little bit, but at some stage, a senior executive is going to see that as a weakness in the system, as a threat to the environment, and go, we have to build around that somehow, either train other people in it or just get rid of that system that you're the expert in. Replace it with something where we can hire lots of people with skills. So I think that's the challenge with the, I can do it myself, is avoid that, because the second thing is, why do you delegate? Because you're trying to free up your own time for the things that are your job. They might not be, to your point, the tactical things of building widgets, writing code, but they're more important things. You need to have time to sit back and work out where the forests are and let your people bring home the trees.
Yeah, I love the analogy sometimes people use of the bicycle. You're riding in the front when you're tactical, and you're riding in the back when you're strategic. And it's sometimes got to make that switch when you're riding on that bike.
Hey, humans of DevOps, it's Nixon here from DevOps Institute. I'm dropping by to share how you can skill up and advance your career with the DevOps Institute premium membership. Our goal is to empower you to gain the edge you need to advance your DevOps skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning. A premium membership gives you all access to what DevOps Institute has to offer. How does getting 30% off all certification exams sound? What about having access to a tool that can assess your team's DevOps capabilities? And if that wasn't enough, members can also read our entire library of skill books to support you during your DevOps journey. Get started today for the price of a cup of coffee by going to devopsinstitute.com/membership. Head to the link in the episode description to receive 20% off your DevOps Institute premium membership.
What tools are there to help me?
So there are approaches. So in the technical way, no, there are, you know, in the usual way of, is there a piece of software you can buy to help you delegate? Nope. Is there a...
Why? There's a software for everything.
Staff management tool that will help you delegate better? Nope. You know, they'll do a tiny piece of perhaps measuring it, but no. I think that there's two sides of it. So the first thing is, maybe even if you're not able to delegate to others, and, you know, in traditional structures, we think of delegation hierarchically, but, you know, in matrix organizations, that's no longer the case. And that's even trickier when you're trying to delegate to somebody who is outside of your control, that you don't have power over, you can only have influence over. And the old adage of, you know, well, that's your job, and you should do this. That's not the best way to approach it. So think about the delegation side of it. Start there. And what you're looking out for is to, think about how you receive delegation. If you're not delegating today and you're aspirational, start there and work out, when do you feel good about somebody giving you a task, and when do you not feel good about it? When did you have to, you know, spend all of your time going back to an individual, to the person who gave you the task, and you know, because you didn't know how to do it and they just threw you in the water and didn't teach you how to swim? These things are like, that's the, at least for me, these are the best ways of learning delegation, is observing other people and stealing the good ideas. I've worked out, for me, you know, scope, resources, responsibility, and then priority being the fifth. But scope is a clear one. You know, perhaps you've been trained in SMART frameworks where it's specific, measurable, actionable, relevant, time-bound, you know, but whatever it is, it's like, that when you're delegating a task, and this is why I say you work it out beforehand. This isn't something you should do in the spur of the moment in the middle of a conversation. It's like, I'm going to give them this piece to do, and I want them to focus on this much of it. Resources. What can they use? How do they get more? You know, how do they get the access to those resources if they don't have them? How do they ask for more if they need it? Responsibility. They are entitled to use these resources. What do they have the control, and this is a big one for new managers, what do they have the control to unilaterally change? And it's very hard, especially for a new manager, to hand that over to somebody else and say, you can decide to make this completely differently if you wish, as long as the outcome is met. So that's the responsibility area. Reward is important, of why should they do this thing? And it's not always, you know, I'll give you a $50 Starbucks card, or I'll buy you a beer down the pub or something like that. It's one aspect of it is, by trusting your team in this area, you will earn their loyalty. Again and again, I have seen this, you know, that as an early manager, I suck too. And, you know, you give tasks and then you try and take it over, or you try and micromanage, and then you'd wonder why they didn't like you, sort of thing. You trust them, you earn their loyalty. And it has a payoff later on that they will be eager to then come up and bring new, fresh ideas to you because of that trust that you've earned from them. Sometimes, depending on the nature of the task, remember that when you delegate, you are giving more work to somebody who figures they have their day full already. Right? So sometimes there's a negotiation. That's part of the resource side of, like, are you going to take some things off their plate? Are you going to acknowledge that, no, you know, you're giving them more to do? But also think about things, you know, maybe it's a possible bonus or a career opportunity or something like that, if it's a large task that warrants that. Otherwise, a reward can sometimes just be recognition. You know, when somebody does a task, don't just tell them personally. Wait till there's a public forum and tell them, you know, tell them in the open plan office space, tell them in the meeting. Yep. Where there are senior managers, you know, your bosses are there. That's the reward side. And then finally, the priority side is one of the tough ones. You have to kind of identify, again, part of the planning process, why employees achieve. If they do this thing that you've delegated and do nothing else, are you going to be happy with their performance? Or if they fail at this thing that you've given them and get many other things done, are you going to be unhappy with their performance? And that, if you can answer both of those questions clearly, then you can delegate to them and delegate priority to them as well. So they know how to put it into their day and work out which tasks can slip or not slip. So those five things again, like that. So the scope, resources, responsibility, reward, and priority.
I love all those. You're teaching me so much right now, by the way. But you know, like, it, and as you're saying it, I keep liking it to parenting.
Yep.
And in, you know, there's a lot of takeaways there. And sometimes management is kind of like, you know, we're not all born teachers. We're not.
I'm sorry, you didn't do a degree in parenting when you
God, I wish they had one. I would have taken it. I would have taken the master's class if I knew what I needed to know now. Hell, PhD. But, you know, it's like things like reward, right, actually help to further teach, right, too. Because when you reward a child, I've learned that it's not just saying good job. Because good job doesn't tell them what they did right. Reward is, I saw you do that. How do you feel about that? I saw you go down the slide, whatever, something simple. I saw, you know, you turn, hey Jason, great job with this report that you wrote. What I liked about it was, that's where you fill that need that people have, right, for a sense of accomplishment.
And exactly. And that's the moment as a receiver of delegation, you go, holy crap, I actually read it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This wasn't just for, you know, sometimes I think people need to know the purpose, right?
Very much so. And I think that comes, and I'll throw this in as an additional hint of that's one of those things. Some people listening will be thinking, I don't have the time to do all of that, through that, to work that out. And that is the clear indicator that you're not delegating. It's really simple, you know. Whatever your relationship with your coworkers and leaders and followers are, you know, that is the worst possible sign. It's like, I don't have time to delegate.
Yeah.
Then you have to, unfortunately, you might have to blow a few weekends to just get in front of that game, delegate some things out, and then you will have the time to do that properly in your general work.
Yeah, like you said earlier, I mean, when you're overwhelmed, you waited too long, right?
And it will happen. It'll happen, but yeah, it's the contraindicator.
It shouldn't be the norm. It should not be Absolutely. Your everyday. Yeah, yeah. People who listen to this show and know that I am a sports fan and know that I played sports and have coached sports and I'm all about sports, but there's a concept with football, American rules football, that, you know, there are two types of coaches. There are the rah-rah coaches, and then there are the teachers, the X's and O's, getting into the, you know, actually like getting into teaching skills. It's interesting to me when you just don't have both. Why can't we be both, right? It's very hard to be both, but I think that's just personality traits, right? Go ahead.
Potentially, I've got a friend who's an actor and they talk about charisma versus presence. And charisma, you know, presence is somebody walks into a room and you're aware that they've walked into the room. Charisma is sort of they walk into the room and they light up the room. And she's an acting teacher, and her statement was, you know, I can teach people presence so that people will notice you. I can't teach charisma. So perhaps in leadership, there is an aspect of that, you know, but I think definitely in what are the tactical skills of management and leadership, for example, delegation, this is something that can definitely be taught. And the weird thing is that in our education systems, we tend to make it the optional thing. We're going to teach you these tactical things that you need to know, fair enough. And if you want to volunteer to be involved in a, you know, fake UN or one of those sorts of things, then you will learn these other aspects of how people work, rather than making that it's sport. It's sort of on the side, team leadership and things like that, but it's not part of the curriculum. So that's one of the challenges, you know, and I think that, well, I don't know if you're a Ted Lasso fan on the
huge TV Ted show, Lasso but, fan.
You know, like, to me, great lessons in sort of leadership and things sneak in that show amongst all the jokes and comedy.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even talking about being a kid in school, you have the kids who do the project, right? In the group project, there's always like the one who kind of takes over and maybe does the project. And then you have the others who latch on. And that's terrible delegation, right? But they're kids, and maybe it's because you know the concept and you want to do it. And I think to effectively communicate what you want done, when you want it, here are the resources to do it, what is priority, and then reward, as you said. I mean, those are such that we're not really taught those things. I don't think we really teach them. So that's it's a great lesson.
I agree. And you know, that aspect of part of the reward being, in some cases, it might just be, hey, does this give them give somebody an opportunity to grow and develop another person's skills? Talking about at a recent conference, talking on DevOps and SLOs and SLEs and SLIs and things like that, and talking about facilitating the negotiation sessions. And one of my proposals or one of my suggestions to people is, when you're facilitating that in an enterprise, it's great to get, you know, look for managers who are not part of your organization, but they naturally have those facilitation skills. They listen to people, they can sort of remove themselves from the debate sufficiently to sort of make notes and things like that, and bring them as a facilitator for your negotiation sessions around, you know, service levels and so on. And, you know, there's a beauty to that, because you're now sort of, you're rewarding that person and giving them an opportunity to learn about your part of the business. And that person will be a supporter of yours later on, because you've given them an opportunity to shine in another area and develop another skill. And that's the same with delegation. You know, if you delegate properly, then they're going to grow and develop more skills. And again, you know, you're always trying to develop everybody into people who can, you know, well, at least that somebody who can replace you so that you can move ahead in your career and develop in their own career so that they're satisfied and they go home at the end of the day happy, versus going home and looking at LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I read about great managers is that they hire people who are better than them, and they teach them like they would want to be taught.
That's a great quote, sort of thing. I think that that's a great approach as well. Some people are fear of, you seem overqualified, you know, you might make me look bad. Yeah, that's not a successful approach, in my opinion. I have people who have been much more successful than me, you know, who I brought into the industry, who are now much more successful than me, and that's great, you know. To watch other people succeed in that way is just so rewarding. And it comes back to your example of your children and things. You know, what do you want? You want them to have a better life than you. You know, you want them Absolutely. To do more wonderful and greater things.
Yeah. And they're great blank slates too, you know, to, you know, they're blank slates. They have no, what's the word I'm trying to use? There's nothing that preconceived, you know, they're not carrying any baggage, you know, we all have our baggage. They don't. And these are it's very basic communication skills that we are teaching and that we're observing with them. And it's the same thing. I mean, we go back to when we started talking about effective communication, and sometimes you need those words to sort of disarm, right? Everybody, some people put up the walls, some people, yep. You know, the body language, you could read it, the arms crossed, we need to feel comfortable. We need to trust.
And in your children, you know, they haven't necessarily learned to shut that down. So they're very blunt and very basic about it. So it's a good learning opportunity.
Yes.
In adults, of course, they've been, you know, they've been in the world for a number of years and have had. They do come in with preconceptions, and this comes back to the point of culture of, you know, understand, you know, you have to learn, you'll get it wrong when you're dealing with a different culture. You know, there are some cultures where the second you ask for something, their response is to say, yes, okay, yes. And what they're saying is, yes, I understand you. They're not necessarily saying, yes, I will do this thing and I accept that I will do it and I accept your timeframes. You have to kind of like, I learned because I went through this and got it wrong the first time. You have to break it down a little bit more with, you know, to understand, okay, and you think that this time frame is okay. And that consultative side of delegation is important as well to get their buy-in. So I was thinking I might ask you to do this. How would you feel about, you know, is that something you'd like to do? And then let the silence make them work.
You know, yeah.
And let them see whether it's something they've thought of or it's going in the direction that they want to go. And those processes are sort of, again, this is why you need to delegate in order to be able to delegate, and which means that you need to delegate so that you're able to delegate. It's a bit like the DevOps sort of infinite loop, right?
Absolutely.
This thing just bounces around and around. And the other part of time that you'll need is talking about after you delegate. So when the delegated work is delivered back to you, set enough, you've got to have enough time to review it properly, right? And not to, again, hopefully not in just a critical eye. You mentioned about how people would give you feedback on things and you know, it's not just enough to say good job, that open it, pull the threads, you know. Always try and find, you know, three things that are good, and if you can find, you know, if you feel it needs to be brought up, some things that are not good. But always bring up the things that are good so that you're emphasizing what it is you want in the future. If the work is of a poor quality, then coach and develop that employee to get to a satisfactory point. When good work is turned in, you know, we talked before about reward, and sometimes it's just recognition, but, you know, help them build up that self-confidence and that realize that they're going in the right direction. And then also the feedback loop on yourself, invite the workers to share, you know, your people to share their thoughts on how you're delegating to determine, you know, and you know, if you just go, well, did I delegate to you well? You're going to get an answer. Oh, yeah, sure, boss. That was great. So you've got to kind of break it out of, okay, you know what? Did I give you enough? Did you have enough information at the front to get this task done? Do you think now that you've done the task and you did such a great job, do you think you're the right person for this task? And that really, while, you know, I'm phrasing them in that way, I'm really getting their feedback on me. And that's where I go back down and write my notes of like, you assess the person wrong in this way, you got this right about them, the same sort of way, positives and negatives for delegating. And that one quick thing while I'm thinking of it, of just, and then there is receiving delegation. And so, you know, no matter where you are in the chain, you know, if you're the CEO, the board is going to delegate tasks to you. It doesn't matter where you are in the sort of food chain, will be receiving delegation. And one thing sometimes that people I see as an opportunity to improve receiving delegation, if a leader is repeatedly asking you how a task is going, it's not necessarily a sign of lack of trust. It's more that you are not communicating enough. Try sending them, now, it might be lack of trust, they might be a crap delegator, right? It might be just that they're not good at what they're doing. But it, when that happens, I learned along the way of like, that's normally means that I'm just getting on with it and forgetting to keep them in the loop. And I found that if I sent, you know, when somebody started asking me, you know, what's happening with that? Is it on track? What's going on? I would start sending them periodic updates. Even if it was a simple, you know, one sentence email of like, still on track, boss, kind of thing. That would be enough. And I realized that then that wasn't happening. You know, they weren't coming and following up on me because the trust was now established both ways. So that receiving delegation aspect of that, that's one of the lessons I learned on the receiving side. And similarly in the same way, sometimes you've got to translate on the receiving end of, okay, I know what I heard them say and what I felt them say, but now let me think about what their world is. Do I really think that they meant to say you're a useless bugger and you can't do anything or whatever, or, you know, was there something missing in there that I didn't understand in the translation? And I think that, you know, when you get both sides right of receiving and giving, that's, it's fantastic when it works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really well said. And there's a term like managing up, and it was made, I'm like thinking of that as you're talking about it. I know it's not the same thing, but in a way we're all sort of, there is some responsibility on us to be able to effectively communicate back to those who are delegating to us, right? That things are working or they're not working for you. I mean, because otherwise they're how do you can't assume, right? There's that old adage about assuming. I think
absolutely. The aspect of delegation of, you know, if you've delegated something, And then, you know, the people coming in every 30 minutes and asking you a question, what did you get wrong in the delegation? Were they not prepared enough? Do they not feel capable enough? You know, it will be, I've always felt that it would be at my end, you know, when that's happening of like, and occasionally it's people skills. Occasionally, you know, it might be that just they do have an insecurity. Maybe there's something else going on in their lives that is stressing them or bothering them or making them feel, you know, if they're a younger person, sort of, it might be they just had a terrible breakup. And so now they feel insecure about themselves, about their world. And that might be making them insecure in their work. So sometimes it's people things, but more commonly it was my fault. It was just like, oh yeah, I asked this, but I didn't realize that you needed to know this other thing before you could really successfully be successful at doing this.
And is it true that the better we get at taking delegation, does that make us better delegators?
I'm a data guy, so I don't have the research that says that's true or not true. But I tend to think of that infinite of Ouroboros, the snake eating itself, of just like you've got it. You're always going to be receiving. If you know, hopefully you'll be delegating as well. And we are, because even when we go into a bagel shop and ask someone to make us a bagel, you know, you're delegating a task to somebody. So you're always going to be receiving and giving. The better you get at one, the better you get at the other. No question.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was great. I mean, look, we could talk about this topic, I feel like, all day. This is
for part two.
These are people talk about delegation, yeah. But I think when it's specific to DevOps or specific to DevOps, what would you say to someone who's a new manager first coming in? What's the biggest piece of advice you can give them? Like, what's the big takeaway you want them to get from this?
I'm going to go. So number one, like anything, do it. In the true world of DevOps and / SRE, you know, you will fail. Don't panic. You know, it's okay. Just do it again. Learn from the mistakes. One of the mistakes, three is sort of avoid upward delegation. So people, you know, when people come back into you and they'll try and shift the responsibility. Some people will try and shift the responsibility back to you. Don't give them the answer, you know, ask for recommended solutions. Get them to still do the work of the process, because I think that's one. And then you brought up sort of the bias one. I think that's a good thing. And then finally, just that, again, that aspect of if you're swamped now, then sorry, yes, you need to sort of make the time on the weekends or some, you know, while your kids are playing on the soccer field, instead of sort of yelling at the ref, sit up the back of the stands and just think about, get ahead of delegation. It is a significant payoff for anybody in leader. And remember that, you know, even when you're asking peers to do work, sideways delegation is still good.
This is great. Thank you so much, Marco, for talking to us about this topic. I've enjoyed it. So thank you so much. And you know what? I wasn't sure whether or not to ask this question because we've spent so much time on a topic, but I want to know it. So what's one unique thing about you that no one knows? You said you've listened to the podcast, so I'm assuming you might have been expecting that question. And if not, I'm giving you the time to think of the answer as I'm talking right now.
So good experience there. So one thing that people don't know about me, it's not necessarily I'm always tricked by these questions, you know, tell us something about yourself that's unique or whatever. I'll give you two things on two different sides of me. I live in Manhattan, right? One of the most densely populated places, kind of thing, you know, in the country. But I made sure I had some outdoor space so that I could grow vegetables, because there is just something about growing things, whether it's humans and DevOps or just growing things that you're going to eat. Don't eat humans and DevOps, tomatoes and vegetables and things like that. But it's fantastic. And then a weird thing is that James Corden on the TV show gave me my Broadway debut. He pulled me out of the audience at one of his shows in New York, kind of thing. And so I got my moment on a Broadway stage. And that was, funnily enough, one of my bucket list things of just like, one day I'd like to be up there and see what the audience looks like. So James Corden, who has never texted me since, gave me that break to be on a Broadway stage.
That is so cool. Well, that's very cool. That's the first time I've heard something like that on the podcast. We've heard many things on this podcast. That's very cool. And as a fellow New York metro area person, that is kind of like on the bucket list, right? Getting to see the other side from the Broadway stage. Well, very cool. Thank you, Marco, so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so much fun.
Thank you, Jason, for having me on. And this has been great. I hope people get something out of it. Feel free to catch me on the website or Twitter, and you'll find me on Twitter and LinkedIn as well.
And then the blog was techwhisperer.com. That's tech-whisperer.com. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same way I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.